Okay, we are holding on the days on the days, and got eight lines from the bottom. Bar Yerom Vacham, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara yesterday had been talking a lot about the question, and we say in the Mishnah, Shehu of the Gogolus is one of the things that's Mekame, a person, to the extent that a Nazir would have to shave and bring his Karbonis for it. The Gemara had been discussing, does that mean a Shedra and a spinal cord, and a spine and a skull, or it means one or the other of them? And the Gemara had kind of left it, the Gemara had kind of left it unresolved at that point. So, Bo Yirom Bahama, Roiva Thomas min Shedra Gogolus Mai. What happens if you have a Roiva, a quarter of a calf, which we said in the mission as the shear of the amount, actually the mission had said a half a calf. The mission had said a half a calf is the amount you need for another Tesla Magalaya. But usually in most contexts in Halacha we say a quarter of a calf is enough to make a person tough. Tosfos had pointed out, we had a Tosfos a few days ago that pointed out that as usual, the Shiur and Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, so the same Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai that says that a Roiva Atzomis is usually Mitame, says that in the case of a Nazir, you need a half a calf in order for him to have to shave. So what happens if you have Roiva Atzomis min Shedu V'Gurulis? You have a quarter of a calf of bones that comes from a spine or from a skull. So Tosfos explains the point of the question is that when we say in our mission, when our mission talks about a half a calf, for example, does it mean that it gavka has to be that that quarter calf comes from an original roiv binyan or roiv minyan, the original most of the frame of the body, the three leg bones, whatever, or 125 bones, most of the bones in the body? But you could argue maybe a shedu and a gogolus are more chomer, and therefore a roiv atzamis from them alone is enough. So what's the greater chumra? Tosfos doesn't spell out. Before I should say, the greater chumra is the fact that very fact that, especially the Rosh points out later on that Rami Bahama's question is really based on this whole previous discussion about whether it's Shedra or Gogolus. Mela, if you say that it's Shedra or Gogolus, that you need both a spine and a skull in order to be metame, fine. I mean, a spine and a skull makes up most of the body as it is. So there's no great chumra in it more than anything else. But if you say that either a skull or a spine is enough, and neither one makes up a significant part of the body, and neither one makes up a roiv as far as the number of bones, maybe they have a greater chumrah, and therefore a quarter of a calf, just from them alone, just from one or the other of them alone, would be enough. Amar Rava, Toshma, welcome, let's prove from our Mishnah, Shedra Vagogolus. So our Mishnah had mentioned a spine and a skull. The Isak Nedach Roiva Atzamas to Asim in Shedra Gogolus Chomer. So if you're going to tell me that you're going to argue that a Shedra and a Gogolus are more Chomer, and they were Hagar changes it to Tomei. If you're going to tell me that a quarter that one side of Rami Bahama's question is that you're going to say that a quarter of a calf of bones from those is indeed Mitame, then why does the Mishnah have to mention a complete Shedra or a complete Gogolus? Listen, I'll Roiva Atzamas Abam in a Shedra Vachola. Let it just say a quarter of a calf of bones that comes from a spine or from a skull, and automatically we would understand if even a quarter of a calf of them is metame, then how much more so the entire thing. Sort of similar to at the beginning of the Peret, where we had, the Gemara after the previous Mishnah, where we had Rabbi Yehuda objecting, why do we need to say mess? If we say kazayis when I mess, this would be a similar idea. Let the Mishnah tell us the Roi about Thomas, and automatically we know that the Shedra of the Gogolos as a whole, Amitame. What do you mean? V'ha Rava Udama, didn't Rava himself say, l'nitzruchel, l'shedra of the Gogolos, shen ben Roi about Thomas, that didn't Rava himself say that we only need the Mishnah to be telling us about the case of a Shedra or a Gogolos that don't contain a Roiva, meaning, in other words, let's say, from a baby. Now, where did Rava say this? We actually didn't find anything where Rava explicitly said this. So Tosfos a few days ago mentioned that when the Gemara had been discussing in that story of Rabbi Yehuda objecting to Rabbi Meir's formulation, I'll mess up, because I have been a mess. So we had over there in the Gemara that Rava had given an answer that suppose you have Roiv Binyan and Roiv Minyan does not contain a Roiva. Again, in other words, we're talking about a baby. So the Rosh Minyan, the two leg bones and thigh bone or whatever, and or the Rosh Minyan, the 125 bones, neither of them amounts to a Roiva, because it's a tiny baby. And nevertheless, by the Mishnah saying Hametz includes that. So Tosfos had mentioned over there that maybe based on that, some people want to change the girsa over there in order to make it fit with what we're saying over here. If we're saying that Rava said, where did Rava ever say that? They want to change the girsa over there to that. Instead of Rosh Minyan and Rosh Minyan, they want to change it to Shed Rav Gogolos. Tosfos over there objects and says that can't really be the point. Melos, the Mishnah, uses the word Met. The Mishnah back on Mekhetz and Mabay had never mentioned Rosh Binyan and Rosh Minyan. So you could argue that when the Mishnah says Meh, that's what it means. It means Rosh Binyan and it means Rosh Binyan or Rosh Minyan. And therefore, you could argue that the Mishnah is telling us even if those don't amount to a Roiva, then it's still Matamid. But the Mishnah does mention Shedra and it does mention Rogolos. So if Rob is going to say that the Mishnah is telling us a case where there is a Roiva versus a case where there isn't a Roiva, then he's still back to the question why it has to say Meh. There's no reason to if it already mentions later on Shedra and Gogolos. So therefore, Tosfos doesn't like that here, sir. So what do we mean over here where Rava said this? So let's learn the next line and then we'll see where we get this. Anyway, so Lechora Rava himself is saying there can be a scenario where you have a Shedra or a Gogolos that don't amount to a Roiva, and therefore we would say you need to be told a Roiva, and separately you need to be told Shedra or Gogolos. Either it's one or the other. So why is Rava trying to prove from our Mishnah that it mentioned that Shedra or Gogolos that automatically that includes a Roiva? It doesn't necessarily automatically include a Roiva. The answer is Bosa the Shomim Rabbi Akiva. Yes, but after he heard it from Rabbi Akiva, then he changed his mind. Now what Rabbi Akiva? Where do we have Rabbi Akiva in here? So Tosfos brings two possibilities. One is that it's not Rabbi Akiva, but rather Mar Ukva. Not Rabbi Akiva, the Tanna, but Mar Ukva, the Amora. And then Tosfos says that actually there would be, according to that, there would be a line missing in the Gemara. After what Rava tries to prove, Rami Bahama's answer from the Mishnah, from the fact that it says Shedra Vagolos, which on the face of it always includes more than a Roiva, and therefore that should prove that a Roiva from them is not Matameh, that you need the whole Shedra or the whole Vagolos. So then Ma'ukva comes in and says, not necessarily. You could have a case where the Shedra doesn't amount to a Roiva or the Vagolos doesn't amount to a Roiva. Then the vote would be that after Rava heard that from Ma'ukva, then he changed his mind. Then he realized, you know what, it's true. My objection against Rami Bahama is not really a good objection. You can't prove anything from our Mishnah, because yes, it could be a scenario like Ma'ukra is talking about. The other possibility that Tosfos says is that it's referring to a Mishnah in Olos, where it mentions separately, the Mishnah over there in Olos mentions, this was the Mishnah that the Gemara had quoted yesterday, a bunch of cases that Rabbi Akiva is Matameh and the Chachamim are Matameh. Among them is, you have, this is a different mission actually. It's a mission in Olis that lists a number of things that are Matameh, the Mago, the Master of Oil. One of them, among them are Shedra, Gogolos, and Roiva. So then the vote would be then that Rabbi Akiva is giving that list over there. So after Rava heard that Mishnah involving Rabbi Akiva, then he realized that yes, the Mishnah would be listing them separately because you could have a case of a Shedra or a Gogolos that doesn't amount to a Roiva. The only problem with that is, and Farshim say, that's a little hard to understand because you have a Mishnah a little earlier in the same parak, a Stam Mishnah, that gives the same list. So why would he have to, all of a sudden, I heard a Mishnah from Rabbi Akiva, and therefore I realize you have a Mishnah at the beginning of that parak that says essentially the same thing. Yeah. Toshma, come, let's try to prove it from the Braisa that the Gemara had brought yesterday. Shammai Erma Etzim Ephraim and Shedra Min Gogolos. That Shammai says even one individual bone from a Shedra or from a skull, not one individual bone, the Roiva can be, even if it came from one individual bone. Or from a Shedra or from a Gogolos. So like the Gemara had assumed yesterday, we don't want to assume that Shammai and the other Chachamim are too far apart in their machloikas. If Shammai is saying even one bone is enough, then the Chachamim presumably would be saying that that it's not just one bone; it does have to be a roiva. It does have to be a roiva, but yes, it can be. But yes, it can be from the shedra or from the gugola. I mean, the Mishnah had been the Mishnah that we quoted that was talking about the Shammai, actually was talking about the regular case of Tumah. He was talking about Nazir, what a Nazir is Megaleach on. But still, I mean, we would assume that the things are not too far apart. The Chachamim are not going to go so far as to say that a roiva from the Shedra or from the Gogolos is not enough. That you need a half a cab, l'chura, they'd at least say a roiva from those is enough. And the answer is, like the Gemara had said yesterday, shiny shamei de machmir tefet. No, we can say shamei is different. He talked to his extra machmir. Yes, there might be a very wide gap between him and the other Chachamim. Literally, mina time of the shamei de machmir. But let's at least be able to prove from that that the reason why Shammai himself is saying that is because he's machmir. But at least we should be able to say that according to the Rabbanon, you need that according to the Rabbanon, you do need a full half a calf, not just a quarter of a calf. Or, I guess Agura changes it to Tahr, that maybe the Rabbanon would argue that the case that Shammai is talking about is in fact Tahr. And the answer is no, not Dafka. Dilmad Tamla Kligu Rabbanon Allah, the Shammai Elba Etzim Echad. No, because the Rabbanon might be arguing with Shammai only on the case of one bone, where you have a roiva that comes all out of one bone. But if you have a roiva from if you have a roiva for no, that the Shammai would be saying one bone by itself is enough to be metame the mago of maso oil. Rabbanon would be arguing and saying that no, you know, it one bone is not enough. It does need to be a roiva.
You go both ways. I mean, if you can go this way, this way.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the point. He's saying one bone from the shedra or the gogolos itself is enough to be metame, even if it's not a roiva. So we assume then that the Chachamim might disagree with him to a certain extent. They might say you need a roiva, but they're not going to go so far as to say that a roiva from a shedra or a gogolos, which Shammai himself is referring to, is not enough. They might. That you need as much as a half a calf.
Anywhere?
No, from the shedra of the gogolos, because that's what Rami Bachomer is asking about.
Maybe a half a calf.
So the Gemara has kind of left it. The Gemara has kind of left Rami Bachomer's question unresolved. The Rambam doesn't seem to make, as far as I could find, I didn't see the Rambam making the distinction. He seems to just say that the general rule is that roiva atzomis, regardless of what kind of bone this comes from, is metame, and in the case of a nazir, you need a half a calf, finished. The not on the usual rule we've talked about a few times is he writes in the Hilchos Tumas Mes, that any nazir, any tumor that the nazir does not have to be megaleach for is only medivrei sofrim. The Raiva disagrees with him on that. And the Mefarshim have a bit of a time discussing whether by divrei sofrim, when the Rambam says Divrei Sofrim, does he actually mean Midrabbanan? So according to the Rambam, it would literally be Midaraisa, only a half a calf of bones in the Tameh, and therefore that's all, that without that, a Nazir doesn't have to shave. Because a Nazir never has to shave when he becomes Tameh Midrabbanan, because you can't shave when you're only Tameh Midrabbanan. You'd be shaving your payas and bringing your Karbanas, which we've talked about before. So only a half a calf is Midrabbanan, Midaraisa, and a quarter of a calf is Tameh Midrabbanan. Or is it? Maybe the Rambam means by Divrei Sofrim, he just means something which is not explicit in Torah Shebichtav. It's something that's learned, that the Chachamim learned out with the Yud Gimel Midrash Shatur and the Dreshes Ben. In which case, it would still be considered Daraisa. It just would be, so to speak, sort of a lesser level of Daraisa. Okay. Another topic, Amar Rav Eliezer, the Kenim of Rishonim, the earlier Chachamim, Miktsasin HaYoimim, some of them used to say chasi kav atzomos, but chasi loy dam l'chol roiva atzomos. Chasi kav atzomos, half a kav of bones, chasi dam loy dam, or half a load of blood, l'chol, applies to everything. That makes anybody tummy, whether it comes to eating truma or whether it comes to another. Whereas when it comes to a quarter of a calf of bones or a quarter of a lug of blood, it's not for everything. It would only be, it only makes you chame insofar as eating truma and going into the Beis Hamikdash, but not as far as a nazir that you should have to shave, and not as far as bringing the carbon Pesach. When we say we have la'oitza Pesach, by the way, here we actually haven't said it yet, the Gemara is going to say it soon. Rashi explains that it means that Rashi explains that it means that the Oysa Pesach is actually a person is able to make the carbon Pesach even if Rashi evidently holds like the understanding of the Rambam that where that Medivrei Sofrim literally means the Rabbanan. Therefore, Rashi says over here the verse is the Rabbanan were the ones who made you tame if you have the quarter of a calf of bones or a quarter of a log of blood. Therefore, when it comes to making the Karim Pesach, which is a matter of Karis, the Chacham didn't want to enforce their din. They left it at the original din Torah that you need a half a calf or a half a loaf. The Rambam explains it differently. Even though the Rambam himself holds, like we just said, that anything that a nazir is not Megaleachon is only Medivrei Sofrim, the Rambam puts it differently. He says when we say Oysa Pesach over here, we mean that a person who became tame by one of these tumas, for example, the quarter of a calf of bones, if the seventh day of his tuma comes out on Erev Pesach, then they can shech the carbon Pesach for him, and he'll be able to, because he'll already be tare to eat it that evening. As opposed to if he became tame with a half a calf or a half a lug, then he wouldn't. That was the original scheme, whatever they have the same. Beistin, Shalach HaReim Omru, a later Beistin said, no. Chatsi kava tzamas v'chatsi lug dam l'chol. Yes, a half a kava bones or a half a lug of blood applies to everything. Roiva tzamas, the Revius Dam, they spelled it out. L'trum of a kodshim av a loy l'nod of a oisa Pesach. When we say l'chol or not l'chol, So the skenim of Rishonim it says chatzik kavat tamas chatzik log dam lakol reviyas tamas reviyas dam loy lakol. Oh, umuktsasen hayu oimim. Sorry, I skipped that line. Umuktsasen hayu oimim. Some of the original chachamim said at roiva tamas reviyas dam lakol that even a roiva of bones or reviyas of blood applies to everything. So even a nazir or even an osa pesach would become tome by the quarter calf or the quarter lug and have to shave and bring his korbanos, etc. Based in Shalach HaReim, Amru, a later based in, said kind of a compromise. Amru, chatsi kava tzomis v'chatsi dag lug dam l'chol. Yeah, hello. Yes, a half a kava bones or a half a lug of dam is tome for all purposes, both for truma and kachim as well as for nazir v'ayis ha-pesach. Roiva atzomis, the revius dam, the truma v'kachim, avaloy l'nazir v'ayis ha-pesach. The roiva or the revius is only as far as truma v'kachim, but not as far as a nazir and not as far as ayis ha-pesach. So which means in other words, so they're sort of compromising. In particular, they're saying that what are they adding over here? They're saying that they're talking about Tumas oil. That if the half a calf or the half a lug, yes, the time is the mag of a master or oil. But the quarter of a calf or the quarter of a lug is not metame ba'oil as far as a nazir va'oisa pesach. For truma and kodshim, it's metame regardless, whether it was maga, masa, or oil. When it comes to nazir or oisa pesach, if they touch it or carry it, then yes. If they're under the same oil as it, then no. How can we say? Rabbi Eliezer seems to be saying that we follow the base in Shalach HaReim. L'chora, Rabbi Eliezer is bringing up here the three possibilities, the two opinions among the original Zekeinim and then the Beis Din Shalach HaReim. L'chora, he's trying to tell us we should follow the Beis Din Shalach HaReim. But why? Ein hachras shlishus machras. A third-party compromise is not considered a compromise in halacha. There's two different explanations what that means exactly. One explanation Tosfos mentions in a couple of places in chat, actually Rashi mentions it in a couple of places as well, is if you have, for example, two Tanoim, one of them says in this case or in that case, the halacha is tameh. The other one says, in this case or in that case, the halacha is tameh. So what does it mean? Both of them understand. Both of them realize, like, there might be a logical reason to distinguish between this case and that case. But for whatever reason, because of their Kabbalah, or because of their svara, or whatever they're saying, nevertheless, we don't want to make that distinction. We're always going to say it's tameh, or we're always going to say it's tahor, or whatever. So then, a third party might come in and say, you know what, that distinction that you guys made but sort of are ignoring, that distinction really should be made. In this case, it's tameh, in this case, it's tahor. Fine, that's considered a hachra. When neither of them mentions this case versus that case, when one of them just says straight out tameh, and the other one says straight out tahor, and somebody else comes and says, yeah, in this case, it's tameh, in this case, it's tahor, where are you getting that distinction from? You're a third opinion. The other Tanoim obviously didn't have any reason to make any such distinction between this case and that case. So it's not like you're sort of agreeing with one of them and agreeing with the other one. No, you're staking out a third opinion. Fine, your third opinion is worth just as much as either of them two. With the Lavdafka, we should follow it. That's one explanation. Tosfos over here mentions another explanation of Achra Shlishit is it means the third generation, like a later generation. You have the original Beis Din had the original Kenim had the two different opinions about the quarter versus the half. If now you have their Talmidim are now coming and saying that okay, in some cases a quarter and in some cases a half. Fine, where are you getting that from? The famous expression the Gemara has in a bunch of places, for example, if Rebbe didn't teach something in the Mishnah, how can Reb Chiya know it? Reb Chiya was Rebbe's Talmud, everything he knew came from Rebbe. By the same logic, in other words, we would say, how did Talmudim come up with an opinion that their Rebbeim didn't have? And therefore we shouldn't be following them. Whatever it is, so back to the question over here. If this Beisdin Shel Achareihem is coming up with a compromise that you're distinguishing between Maga and Masa versus Oil, neither of these Kenim or neither group of Kenim or Shonim made any such distinction, and they were the Rebbeim, why should we follow this Beisdin Shel Achareihem? Amr of Yaakov Ha'idi, the reason is because not just their own Svara, Mipi Shmua Amru, they said it based on what they heard. They heard a tradition that went back to Chagas Chayyim Malachi, and even before that, actually, it's the Kenim Lenevim, Lenevim Esarua, Lanche Knesset Gdolo, all the way back to Moshe Kibbutz Torah Mitzrayim. So it's not just their own logic. The original Kenim had not heard this Shmua. Therefore, they had no reason to think that there's any reason to distinguish between Maga, Masa, and Oil. Therefore, they came up with their own svaras about Chatzi Kav versus Roiva Kav, when it applies, when it doesn't. The based in Shel Achareihem, somebody came and reported to them what Chagas Chavi and Malachi had taught, their own Kabbalah that went back to Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, that there is in fact such that distinction. So we're not following. So we are following the later Beis Din, but not really them. We're really following the tradition that they revived that went back to the beginning. Where is it? It doesn't say Shmaya every time. It just says we're based in Shel Achareihem, a later Beis Din. I mean, Rabbi Eliezer is talking about Tzkenim or Rishonim versus based in Shel Achareihem. He's not saying chronologically what periods we're talking about. Oh, you're right. Okay. So, Pishmai Rabtayan, okay, based on Mishal and Pishmai. Okay. Maybe the reason why Rashi focuses on Shmai Rabtayan is because basically that was the last generation where there was only one machlokes in halacha. We know, the Gemara mentions in Chagiga, that until the times of Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, there was never any permanent machlokes, because any time they had a machlokes, they'd always just go to the Beis Din HaGadol and then vote and decide on it. In the times of Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yochanan is when they had the first machlokes on smicha, whether you do smicha on korbanos nedava, on private korbanos, on yomtiv. But up till Shmaya Vavtayan, that remained the only machlokes. Then, starting in the times of Hillel and Shammai, yet Hillel and Shammai themselves had three more machlokes, and their talmidim had hundreds of them. So maybe that's why Rashi is saying Shmaya Vavtayan, because that's the last time when we can be certain that what they said is really a clear thing that goes back to Chagas Chayyim Malachi and beyond them. Whereas once you get to Hillel and Shammai already, it's not so clear because there were machlokes. Maybe. I don't know. Okay. Then the Mishnah had finished off Al Elo on Nazir Mezaleach. On these, the Nazir shaves. On these ones listed in the Mishnah. So, The Mishnah said the expression of the Mishnah actually had been the Mishnah had started off. Al elu tumas anazir megaleach. The nazir shaved and didn't tarbanis for the following things, and then it gave the whole list. Then it finishes off al elu anazir megaleach. For these, the nazir shaves the mazir b'shlishu b'shvi and sprinkles on the third and seventh day, etc. So what's the double al elu? It sounds usually the Gemara generally assumes that when the Mishnah does that, it's coming to exclude something else that you might have thought to add. So al elu d'reisha, the first al elu l'mo'uti etzim kesarda, that comes to exclude the case of a bone the size of a grain of barley. Da'amagoy v'amasoy ein, you're only tome, the nazir is only megaleach if he touches it or carries it. But he doesn't become tome for it by tumas oil. So al elu only the ones that we say magamasa and oil, not that one. Which Tosis points out. I mean, the Mishnah itself later lists that explicitly. It says etzim kesarda is only magamasa, not oil. Fine. Tosis says sometimes the Mishnah will do that. The Mishnah will start by saying al elu, and then later on it will specify exactly what's included and what isn't included. The al elu just say. So what about the al elu of the last part of the Mishnah after the list? That is l'mo'uti even haschuchis. That comes to exclude a stone of schuchis. So what does that mean? Rashi says that it means even misama. It means like this. If you have a case, it happens with a mess, it happens with a zav, a couple of different cases of tumah where it happens. If you have a heavy stone on top of the source of tumah, and then somebody sits on top of that stone, or you put kalim or whatever on top of that stone, even though their weight is in no way being supported by the mess or the zav or what have you, because the stone itself is heavy enough that it's not, or let's say even you have pegs knocked into the ground and the stone sitting on top of them, so the stone is sitting on the pegs, it's not sitting on the mess or the zav or whatever at all, nevertheless, the tumor still goes through. Whoever sits on top of that stone still becomes tummy. The point would be over here then. Even as schuchis then would mean over here that if you have the mess under that stone and you sit on top of that stone, you would become tummy. But that's not considered a strong enough tumor to make the nazir be megaleach for. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation, which is the same that Tosfos brings, is that even as schuchis means under the Evan Masama there is a tefach.
There is a tefach,
but nevertheless it still goes. Then it's Bakasra the Bakasya, then it's no Khidosh. Rashi's second explanation is not the same as Tosis is actually. Rashi's second explanation is that we mean a stone that overhangs a caver. Rashi quotes from a Gemara and Shabbos that any movable objects are able to transmit tumor from one place to another. So if you have tumor over here and you're standing over here, for example, and there's something on the talpalin that overshadows both of you, then you become tumay, except for clay dwellin, clay avonim, and clay adama, things that themselves are not able to make a kabel tumor. Clay avonim, stone kalim, are not able to make a kabel tumor. That's why Koyanim used to use them a lot in those days. The famous burned house they found in Yerushalayim in archaeological digs. They identified it as a house of Koyanim, partly based on the fact that all the kalim over there was stoneware. So then the idea would be that when we say over here the ma'uti, even as chukis would mean that if a nazir is standing somewhere near a caver and you have a clay abonim, you have a stone kali overhanging both of them, then he doesn't become tomei, he doesn't shave and bring his karbanis. Tosfos brings yet another explanation that even as chuchis means something that we're actually going to talk about in the next Mishnah, which the Mishnah is going to talk about in the next Mishnah, which we'll learn tomorrow. If you have, for example, a stone fence, some stones stick out of the side of the fence, and one of them overhangs a mess or a caver or what have you. Even though you do become tummy from it, that's not considered strong enough too much for another to be megaleach. So the Gemara over there calls it price. Over here we're calling it schuchis. Even as schuchis.
Because of that oil.
It's not a real full fledged oil. The Gemara will talk about it. We'll deal with it tomorrow. Yeah. Um, So then, according to any of these explanations, according to Rashi's first explanation, then, according to all three explanations so far, it's called Evanat Zchuchit Meloshon Tzchach. It's sitting on top of the mess, or it's overhanging the kever, or. Then there's yet another explanation that some of the Foshim bring, that Zchuchit over here is like the word Zichuchit, meaning glass. And so they say that Evanat Zchuchit would be a sheet of glass. They would understand that a sheet of glass is not considered an oil as far as Tumah, which is a very big chiddush, and a lot of other Mepharshim have problems with that shot. The vote would be, according to that, the Gemara might be saying that since glass is transparent, it can't really be considered an oil. An oil would have to be something that blocks out the light or whatever, not glass. Okay, then the Mishnah had mentioned, one of the things the Mishnah had mentioned, its list is Chatzi Kav HaTzomer, the Chatzi Kav HaTzomer, the half a kav of bones. Which we said then again maga master oil. So chatzi kav atzamis ein roiv atzamis loy. So that implies obviously that only a half a kav would a nozer have to shave for, but not a quarter of a kav. L'chore, it sounds like a quarter of a kav. You're not even the kav of maga of master, because the Mishnah didn't mention it. The heichidomi. What are we talking about? If you're going to say that the roiva includes any piece of the bone the size of a grain of barley, typically Mishnah Metzim Kesarda, fine. Forget about the size, roiva, or chatzi kav, or how much bone you have collected together over you. One individual bone the size of a grain of barley is enough to be the time of Magu Masa, the Mishnah said. So you become Tamei on that ground alone. Ela to akmach akmuchi. So you'd have to say then that the case is talking about, let's say, somebody took the bones and ground them into a fine powder, like kemach means flour. Like he ground them into a powder as fine as flour, which then the vote is, there's no etzem kesarda in there. Some of Farshim asked that the Gemara yesterday had discussed the issue of etzem kesarda shenechlok l'shnayim. If you have a piece of bone the size of a grain of barley that was divided in two, there was a machlokes over there. Rabbi Akiva had said it. Rabbi Akiva and the other chachamim with him had said that it's still tameh. And Rabbi Yechon and Nuri had said that it's tahor. So what are we talking about over here? The chorda, even if you ground them up, you still have a few, the ground up fragments still amount to an etzem kesarda. So a couple of different answers. One of them is that indeed we might be talking about here according to Rabbi Yechon and Nuri. And the other possibility is that there's a difference between when you have one bone kesarda, which is broken in two, and you can still tell that it's originally bone, versus akmach akmuchi over here, where it was ground down into a flour-like powder, and you can't even tell that it came from bones anymore. Then we would say that the concept of etzem kesarda ceases to exist. So if you have a roiva, that's not enough to make you tell me you'd need a half a kav. And incidentally, often the Foshim point out, based on that, If you just touch it, you wouldn't become tamei. By the same logic as with Rokov, that the Gemara I talked about the other day, Rokov is also a powder, and touching it doesn't make a person tamei, because you can't be touching a whole tarvot, a whole ladle for a whole spoonful of it at once, the whole shear at once. If the bones have been ground down into powder, you'd have the same thing. When would you be tamei? By half a cup of it, only if you carry it, only masa, yeah, or oil. And the Mishnah continued, that a nazir has to shave and bring his karbanos for if he becomes tamei by a limb from a dead body or a limb from a living person, which have the proper amount of flesh on them, which we said the other day, the proper amount means enough. Yeah, this is, yeah. Yeah, but maga and b'masa and b'oil, actually.
No.
Oh, akmach akmuchi would only be, it wouldn't be maga, practically.
Yes,
Tosfos just says that, then the akmach shetochen heid, if you came achos up, the kag akmach, let me come from etzim kesarda. Anyway, so basa karoi, we said the other day, means that if you have enough flesh on it, enough flesh left on it, that it would be able to heal if the person was still alive. Incidentally, the Rambam points out, based on other Gemaras and Chulim and some other places, that the marrow of the bone also counts for that purpose. And not just the muscle, the flesh, or whatever on the outside of the bone. It also includes the marrow inside, which can also help the bone regenerate and heal. Therefore, you have to take that into consideration also.
Is a dead person that has enough meat on him? Isn't that lined up in the
house? No, we're talking about, in other words, if you have, let's say, for example, an arm or a leg or a toe that was separated from a mess. But there is basal karoy on it, there's enough flesh on it,
that even if it would be able to regenerate, it would be able to heal,
then that's metamic. And actually, the Gemara is going to point out, at the end of the Amud, which
and
probably will... So for the bone by itself, that's another thing. The Gemara is going to point out, the Gemara is going to discuss, we'll start the discussion today and probably continue it tomorrow, that if the aver has within it a piece of, if the aver has within it a bone, which is at least the size of a soda, then it's metamic on those grounds anyhow. So it would have to be, you would have to be talking about an aver that's so small, let's say, imagine like a little toe from a baby or something, that's so small that the bone inside it might not even amount to a kesod.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, enale and basa karoi mai. So now we have the question, what happens if there's not enough flesh on it to regenerate? So Tosfos says, the point is, obviously the Mishnah is saying that if you become tamid ba'oil on that, then obviously nothing happens. That's the whole point why the Mishnah mentions basa karoi. But is it possible that you might still become tamid b'mago b'masa from it? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Eina Nozer Megaleach Alehem. So Rabbi Yochanan says that indeed a nozer would not be Megaleach Alehem even for mago b'masa. Rish Lakish Amar Nozer Megaleach Alehem. Rish Lakish says he would. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Eina Nozer Megaleach Alehem. Why Dark Tani B'Reisha? Because we see the Reisha, meaning our Mishnah, the Reisha as opposed to the Sefer, which is the next Mishnah, which is going to discuss the cases she'ein ha'nozer megaleach alehen. So the Reisha, our Mishnah, clearly says, aleivim ha'nameth, v'aleivim ha'nachai b'chula, she'yesh alehen, that only if they have basa karoi. She'yesh alehen kezayis basa ein, okay, kezayis basa is really not right. It should basa karoi, because it's not really the question of kezayis, and not the question whether there's basa karoi. Aval ein aleivim loy, but if there's not that amount of flesh on them, then no, it's not matame. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Whereas Rish Lakish would say you do have to shave. The reason is Rish Lakish says because the Sefer, the next Mishnah, which lists the various cases that another does not have to shave for, does not include the case where there's not basa karoi on it. So evidently, then Rish Lakish says, evidently the Mishnah means to imply that no matter what, whether basa karoi or not basa karoi, there are going to be cases where the nazir has to shave for them, namely maga masa. Fine, the Mishnah is telling us oil not. Okay, for Rabbi Yechanan, what would Rabbi Yechanan answer to you on that? He would say, kol hecha the mashma miklala lo katani b'sefer. Fine, but any case where we can ourselves deduce it from the general rule the Mishnah had said, then there's no reason to mention it in the Sefer. And it was our Mishnah had mentioned, for example, you have kezayis min ames. Obviously, less than a kezayis is not an issue. Similarly, our Mishnah had mentioned maloy talbud rakov, so less than a talbud obviously is not an issue. So for our purposes, since the Mishnah mentions shigesh ala basa karoi, automatically that implies ain't ala basa karoi, then you're not. There's no reason for the next Mishnah to spell that out. Now, that's what the Gemara is going to take up later. That's the Gemara is going to take up later. If there's a bone kisoda in there, then obviously we understand why you'd have to be megaleach on it. Sure, but if there's no bone, if there's not even a bone kisoda in there, why then would Rish Lakish say that you have to shave? What's the source of tumah over there? Why? Our Mishnah had mentioned half a cav of bones, which obviously implies only a half a cav, not less, not a quarter, not any amount, whatever. And the Sefer on the Dalet Amud Aleph mentions, in the list over there, it mentions a roiva of bones. So obviously the Mishnah does list at least some things that, even though we could have understood them from the Reisha. Once the Reisha said Chatzi Kav, L'chura the Sefer has no reason to mention Roiva Kav, and yet it mentions it. So obviously you see that's not a hard and fast rule. So maybe Rish Lakish is right then. So what would Rabbi Yochanan answer to that? Rabbi Yochanan is saying, why do I think that you're not megaleach if ain't alabasa koroi, because the next commission doesn't mention ain't alabasa koroi. Fine, the next commission mentions roi v'atomis. So if it doesn't mention ain't alabasa koroi, maybe that proves Rish Lakish's point, that whether basa koroi or not, there's always going to be cases where nozer will become tummy for it, where we'll have to shave for it. The answer is chosam, that's different. Because in that case, ilav roiva atzomis, if the next Mishnah had not mentioned the case of roiva atzomis, hava amina, filo amagoiva, amasoiloi, then you would think that maybe even the nazir doesn't have to, doesn't have to shave and bring this korbanos, even if he touched them or carried them. Lahachi is just the misni roiva atzomis. Therefore, the Mishnah has to spell out roiva atzomis, the alashilon hudein on nazir megaleach, that the nazir doesn't have to shave if he is only ma'ahil on them. To overshadow, or he's on top of it, it's on top of him, or they're both under the same roof, whatever. So in that case, yes. But in the case of yeshal l'basa koroi versus einol l'basa koroi, so no, given that the Mishnah has said yeshal l'basa koroi yomatamen, then the next Mishnah can assume that we understand from that einol l'basa koroi, then it's different. How about v'chassilu gam, the shamit mina chassilu gam ein revius dan loy? How about, though, you have another case that our Mishnah mentioned something and the next Mishnah mentioned the inverse. Our Mishnah had said that for half a lug, two revius of blood, a nazir has to shave. The next Mishnah mentions, v'chassoni the sefer revius dan, and yet the sefer mentions that a quarter of a revius, he doesn't have to. So again, the l'chora, we should understand from our Mishnah, half means a half and not less than that. The Mishnah has to spell it out. So again, you should argue the same thing. The Mishnah should have had to spell out Ein Ol Basa Koroi, and if it doesn't, then proves Rish Lakish. Again, the answer is Hasam La Pukim in Rebbe Akiva. Fine, but that Mishnah has to tell us Revius Dam in order to tell us not like Rebbe Akiva. The Amar Rebbe Akiva, Revius Dam, Abba Mishneh Meis Mitam Abba Oil. That Rebbe Akiva says, okay, so argues that we have in the Gemara is that Rebbe Akiva is saying, which we quoted a couple of days ago, that a Revius of blood that comes from two different Meisim, so each one, less than a revius came out of them and got mixed together, that it's still matana b'oil. Tosfos changes the gersa and says that later on, toward the end of the parak, Rabbi Akiva says that a nazir would have to shave for mago or masa of a quarter of a revius of blood, not a half a log like it says in our Mishnah. So therefore, the next Mishnah, would have to spell out revius dam to tell us not like Rabbi Akiva. So far then we've gotten to the point then we haven't been able to prove anything against Rabbi Yochanan. So we could still say like Rabbi Yochanan that the nazir doesn't have to shave for. So now the Gemara asks, "Hi, Avim and Ames, Heichi Dami." Okay, let's get back to this case of Avim and Ames that Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish are arguing on. What size Avim are we talking about? If that limb contains a bone at least the size of a grain of barley, my time is the Rabbi Yochanan. Then why would Rabbi Yochanan say that maga and masa is not a problem? Of course, in essence, the order is the time of the mago and masa, not the oil. Fine, but mago and masa. Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it's not that it's not an issue at all. Well, why not? My time is the Rish Lakish. And if there's no bone the size of a grain of barley in it, so again, it comes from a little tiny limb where the bone in it is not even the size of a grain of barley. And you know, the other possibility could also be we talked the other day about Nephilim, about stillborn babies. You can have babies start out, their skeleton starts out as cartilage and only gradually, partly during pregnancy and partly afterwards, as the baby is developing, it develops into bone. So you could have a case where a tiny little bit of it started turning to bone, less than a soda, let's say. The rest of it is still cartilage. So then again, so why would Rish Lakish say that you're Tame in such a case? The answer is Amalach Rish Lakish La'olam de'less me'asim k'sa'ora. Yes, we could be talking about a case where the boning is less than a sa'ora. Da'afilachi rachmana ravye. And nevertheless, the Torah still there's a special ribui, a special limud in the Torah that such a thing is that such a thing is matame. B'magu v'masa. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, the pasuk says v'chol asher yigal pnei asod, that anything that touches on the surface of the field, that touches a dead body. Here we're not talking about tumas oil. The reason why the Torah mentions the field, meaning we're talking about tumas maga, the tumah of touching it. It's an open field, so there's no oil involved. Yet. So v'chol asher yigal pnei asod. Then the pasuk says v'chala cherev, in whether it's somebody who's killed by the sword, over mace, or in a dead person. And the pasuk continues, at some adam, or the bone of a person, or a cover, or a grave. So the braisa darshins each of these phrases in the pasuk that is teaching us a different din, a different detail of tumas nes. Al pnei asod, when it says on the face of the field, de amahil al pnei ames, this refers to somebody who overshadows on top of the body. And without that, we would only know. Earlier, the pasuk says, zot ha'tora adam ki yomus ba'oihel, that if a person dies in a tent, so anything that comes into the oil is tummy for 7 days. You wouldn't know from, so fine, you'd understand then that if you have, you're here and the mess is here and there's an oil over you, then you become tummy. How would we know from that if the mess is here and you bend over him, that you become tummy? We wouldn't know that. We only know that from apnei asode. Then the pasuk continues, b'cholo, in the pasuk, b'chalal cherev goes together. Literally, b'chalal cherev means in somebody who was killed by the sword. The Gemara is doubting it, among other things, because there's no reason, Rashi mentions it on the pasuk course over there, there's no reason to distinguish between somebody who was killed by the sword and somebody who died naturally and somebody who died of any other cause. If the pasuk makes a point of mentioning it, it has to be that we're learning something from it. So b'chalal means, this teaches us about the case of a limb that came from a living person, where also the Mishnah had said that it's matame, again, only where there's enough flesh on it to heal afterwards. So we're talking about, in other words, let's say, again, when a person had to have their arm or leg or what have you amputated, but the muscles are still there, enough that it would have been able to regenerate if the person was healthy. That's what the pasuk means by b'chol. Rashi brings over here, maybe Rashi had this gear, so that the reason why we learn it is Eber ha-nechlal min achai. It's an Eber that was made dead from the body, meaning it was alive, it was attached to the body, and then it was made dead by being cut off. But it could have been alive. Cherev, we learn from that, ha-reza t'cholo, when it says a sword, that teaches us that the sword is just like the dead person. This is a very famous thing among the Rishonim, what exactly this means. First of all, so first on a basic thing, Tosfos says what it means is that, for example, a sword or any other metal keli that touches a mess becomes an avi avos ha-tuma. It becomes not just an avatuma like, for example, a person who touched a mess, where then that person can be, the person who touched the mess can be metame other kalim or whatever, but he can't be metame another person. He's an avatuma. He can be metame another person, but that's it. After that, solution, the tuma, etc. The sword is considered exactly, or the metal keli or whatever, is considered exactly like the body itself. It's an avi avos ha-tuma. However, there is a major machlokes rishonim. First of all, does that only apply to metal kalim, or does it apply to other materials as well? Second of all, does it mean, like Tosfos is saying over here, that the kalim becomes a avos ha-tumah, or does it just mean that it becomes an avatumah? Maybe hareu kacholo maybe means that it becomes a very high level of tumah, but not quite as high as a mess. Maybe not to the extent, for example, if it touches something else, it makes a tummy too much shiver, a tummy for 7 days and needing sprinkling of paradrum or water, etc. So one way of looking at it is that it means that it becomes a viabosa tumor. Another one is that it's just an avatuma. And the other one is whether it only applies to metal or whether it applies to any other material. Okay, in any case, we learn that from the word cherev. Then it says Oibameis, or in the dead person, the Eva Nephilim and Ames. This refers to a limb that was cut off of the dead person. Again, same idea. If there's enough, if there's enough flesh on it, Oibe Etzem Adam. Then the pasuk says. In the bone of a person, this teaches us the roiva summit. This is talking about the roiva, the quarter of a cow bones that we talked about earlier. That's matane. Or the kever is a kever sasim. When it says a person, when it says or in a grave, this means a sealed up grave, meaning that there's no cholal tefach. You mentioned before, but a cholal tefach, or if there's a space of a tefach, and that kind of confines the tumor. Inside that kind of confines the tumor inside the oil, but a kever sasim, if you have a person buried and then there's like a monument over it where there's no empty space, tefach by tefach by tefach, not only the monument, then actually what happens is not the kasva or the bakasva or edis in that case. What actually happens is the entire monument over the grave and all of anything that touches around it becomes tummy. It doesn't just go straight up, that's the thing. So it spreads to all the surroundings of the whole thing. It's called kever sasim. As opposed to, if there was a cholol tefach in there, then what would it be then? Then around it is not tameh, and even on top of it, I don't think it's tameh. I don't remember that point though. Well, where the hole? I'm talking about. In other words, you have the mess here. You have the hole above here, and then you have the monument or whatever above that. Which in that case we say that the kever, that's what it is. The kever becomes like the mess himself. It's not bakasva, would mean the mess is buried over here. You have a huge monument over him. We would say the tumor only goes up directly above the mess. No, what we do is there's a kever sasum. We consider as if the whole kever was the footprint of the mess. Therefore bakasva, the entire side of that monument. And if you touch the sides of it also, you become tummy. So we learn that from Oibakover. But all of that was talking, all of that, since the pasuk had started out, al pnei hasodah, and he said that al pnei hasodah refers to oil, then therefore that means that all these things are matama ba'oil. The ilu gabi negiyah, but when it comes to touching, amar Rav Yehuda, tanya, that we learn in the braisa, v'chol ha-negiyah ba'etzem v'cholol, the pasuk just mentioned touching a bone or a corpse, a dead person. So ba'etzem is etzem kisarda. The word etzem means a piece of bone the size of barley, of a grain of barley. V'cholol ze'ev ha-nechom an-achai ve'en ve'la'alas ha-rucha. V'cholol over here refers to a limb that's cut off of a living person and there's not enough flesh on it to heal. V'mes ze'ev ha-nechom an-ames, same thing, and there's not enough. V'kever. Or a grave, and Amar Shlachas that kever shalifnei adibu. This refers to a kever that was created before Matan Torah. That such a kever is only metamed b'mago, is only metamed b'mago if you touch it, but not for oil. Which starts to get into over here the discussion about kever over kachavim. We've talked about before that goyish kvarim are not matamah ba'oil. There's the opinion of Reb Shimon there's the opinion of the Rabbanan that they are, but there's the opinion of Reb Shimon that they're not, and the halacha is like Reb Shimon in that. It does just discusses what we mean exactly. Shalifnei adibur, it can include, for example, even people, let's say, Tosfos says people who died after Matan Torah, but before the parsha of Tumah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Whatever it is, the point is that Rosh Lakish is saying, based on these two prices, you see that there is a difference between touching and oil. Oil, the process of oil, we're learning that it's only if Yeshma Lahaus Arucha, if there's enough flesh on there to heal. With Maga or Masa, with Maga, it doesn't say that. With Maga, it's even aimless, in the Lahaus Arucha. Therefore, in other words, we can say, forget about Esim Kisa, forget about whether there's a bone in there the size of a grain of barley. Once it's considered an aver, even if Enba Kedela Haos Arucha, then you become Tomei by touching it. Not like Rabbi Yochanan is saying that you wouldn't, or at least that a Nazi wouldn't have to shave for that. Okay. And we'll finish up the discussion tomorrow, Rav Hashem.